Welcome back to Between Takes with Opal Entertainment. I'm Olivia O'Neill.
And I'm Aiden Driscoll. And today we are joined in the studio by our dearest friend,
Margaret Slater.
Margaret is going to give us a crash course in Animation 101 as she walks us through a brief history of animation and the different stages a project takes on while in production.
We'll also hypothesize about the importance of storytelling and what the most important part of storytelling is.
So if you want to hear us talk about the Lego Movie and Ratatouille for an hour, sit back and enjoy this week's episode of
Between Takes.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how stoked are you?
Oh my goodness, easily 10.
I didn't say which direction that, like, the stoking
easily is. 10. How about you guys? Yeah.
I'm excited.
Getting texts that are more important. Nope, that's not that important.
Cool. All right.
Welcome to the show, Marge.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you got it. Go ahead whenever you're ready. I think I did the same joke with Mom when she was on. And she
makes it so uncomfortable.
I don't know. I just, So on this show, have you heard any of our show?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I will, though.
Okay.
I will. Cool. I'm subscribed.
Oh, great.
I get notifications.
That's half the battle, honestly. Yeah. Well, so yeah, we just like chat about whatever.
Okay,
just
awesome.
Just kind of get to know each other. We already know you pretty well. Like, yeah. I've known you since we were like five or something.
Wow, that's a long time.
Do you have a first memory of me?
I remember when you guys would come over and eat ice cream.
Yeah.
That was good.
That was a good time.
Good times.
I loved your sister Abby because she would pile those bowls full of ice cream.
She was so good at scooping ice cream. She would give you so much.
She was the best. She still is probably pretty good.
I hope so. I hope she's continued to carry on that skill.
Years later, we all got ice cream and she was serving it. I was like 15 at this time. And she served ice cream again, and then it was like, you account for, like, proportions changing. For, like, I've gotten larger, so you give me a larger serving. Yeah,
wow. Anyway,
it was a good job.
That's a true skill.
It is, for sure.
She should put that on resume.
She should.
Yeah.
I don't get
in
it.
The
I
mean, special skill, like, bracket.
Oh, she'd be a millionaire at this point.
Absolutely.
You should talk to her about that.
I'll text her.
Sounds good. Yeah. So you just want to tell the folks kind of like your background, who you are, what you do, how your life started and where it's at now?
Yeah. Well, I grew up with you guys and in Rochester, Minnesota, and we were all in the same like theater group together and created shows and stuff. And I really loved acting and telling stories and all of that, and I also really enjoy drawing. So later on, I was like, man, if only I could put drawing and acting together, but that's not a thing. And then later on, I found out, like, wait a minute, animation, that's like drawing and like acting and telling stories. So at the beginning of high school, I started taking animation classes. With this man, he was super talented, like, had worked at, like, a lot of different studios and like just knew a bunch.
He worked at DreamWorks
and
point, didn't
he? DreamWorks, Disney, like all the big studios. And so he was like teaching high schoolers. So I ran across the classes and I started taking them all throughout high school. And I kind of went crazy. I like I quit everything and like completely devoted myself to it. I was like, I'm like a full in like type of person. So I completely started like devoting myself to animation. And yeah, that's pretty much been it. So all throughout high school, I was animating. Then my professor knew the professor at Lipscomb University, who was an animation hero of mine. And he contacted me with him and sent him some of my stuff. And then we got connected. And then I ended up going to Lipscomb. And then now I'm working at Pencilish Animation Studios.
Wow.
That's
quite the solid. And you're still young.
That's so cool that you like were like, this is my goal, like to create stories and animation. And you probably didn't know like where that would lead exactly, but you just took the opportunities as they came. And then now look at this is really
and
cool.
And didn't take the opportunities that would have hindered that.
And like said no to things that were like,
yeah, there was a lot of
can't put,
A lot of us trying to rope you back into what you were doing. And you were like, no.
I think a big part was just like, I feel like being homeschooled, having like so much time to be able to like just like devote to like what I really loved.
Mm-hmm. Did you like, and, like sorry.
Oh, sorry. No, keep just going. I was just thinking the other day about like how much, just how grateful I am for my parents and like how much they gave to me. Just like they always like ever since I was young always gave me the art supplies, always like provided for me like these amazing classes and would like just really support me in like anything that I was like, yeah, I want to try this. They would be like, okay, here's the like tools, like go for it. So like I just am so grateful for like the way they've been able to like see those desires in me and just like help support that.
I always liked it because whenever we'd come over to your house, sometimes it was like an actual like established, like you invited our family over for dinner or something like that. But even at the most prepared, there was always a like half finished Marge project floating around somewhere. But then when we'd come over sometimes impromptu and we just like walk in, there were like a dozen half finished Marge projects of like drawings or sculptings or whatever. And that was always a fun part. I really like your house.
Hey,
good job on you. I mean, I know you weren't the only person that made the house nice.
I did it all. Built it myself.
I mean, I also liked your parents and your siblings and all that. So, and you're had this cool night, little toys, toy nights.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why that was hard to say, but that was a highlight of hanging out with you. So, what are you working on now at Pencil-ish?
Yeah, Pencil-ish.
Like similar it,
like
to pencil?
Like a pencil-ish.
But kind of ish.
Yeah,
like not entirely.
Okay. Right now, I am working on creating like a lot of the art that will be on social media to like advertise for the upcoming project, for their like upcoming releases of their shows and stuff.
Cool.
And then I also get to animate the stickers like that you use on Instagram. So like you search like a GIF or whatever, and then like you tap one of the stickers and like the characters like popping up their head or something. Yeah, it's so
that's
much
amazing.
Fun.
Oh, that's
cool. So how do you like, I assume there's like a common theme of, I don't even know much about it, but I'm assuming the show has like a way that the animation, how do you, because like if you went off, do you know what I'm saying?
Like kind consistent of, character design.
Like, do you have to like meet with them to like know what the show like looks like and how they animate and then go off and animate the, and draw the,
that's a really good question. So in animation, you always have like the character designers create like model sheets.
Okay.
And so they'll draw the characters from like different angles, like do an orthographic where like the character's being completely turned around from like all the different angles.
Yeah.
So you can really like use those as reference. And I like lean on those very heavily because I'm not like creating the characters, so I need to like make sure they're on model and that they look like those characters from the show.
Because I could see that. I've always like wondered how so many people can work on the one project and their drawing style is going to be different, like or their background. So it's like, how do they meld that? But that's cool.
And it's kind of interesting in like the old movies, like Beauty and the Beast. One animator was mostly, like, assigned to one character, so there wouldn't be that, like, shifting a lot. But, like, Belle, there were multiple animators that did work on her. So, like, in different scenes, she looks different. Mm-hmm. Like, you can kind of tell. Like, okay, I don't think maybe these were the same animators.
Whereas, like, the Beast is pretty consistent.
Yeah, the Beast is very consistent.
Yeah.
And because Glenn Keane animated her.
Are you a fan of Glenn Keane?
You know, kind of. Okay. I talk about him now and then.
You do. but just real quick, since like the morning Marge got into to animation, Glenn Keane is in
has been my every obsession.
Other conversation. Yeah. That is your celebrity crush.
Yes.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? I got sidetracked.
About like consistent character design and all that.
Oh, yeah. So, but the fun thing about hand-drawn animation was like people would be cast to one character because they needed that consistency throughout the entire film. So like some people would get kind of typecast. Like there was this one guy who would always like draw all the Disney princesses. Like he would always get all the females. And then like
did they
this
do the
one
character design as
like,
well or just the actual animation?
Yeah. So also back then, like they wanted like the character to come supernaturally to the animator. So like, Glenn Keane, he designed the Beast. Mm-hmm. And, like, Tom Bancroft, he designed the Mushu from, like, Mulan and stuff. And so, like, they would all, like, design
the characters. Just, like, know this guy. This is just a guy you know at this point. Wait, I remember you telling these stories exciting? Way back when, and you were like, I might meet this guy.
Wait,
and
I know.
You know who?
Tom Bancroft.
And he's at Lipscomb, right? Yeah. Is he a teacher? What is his position?
Yeah, so he was my animation teacher, and he's the one who started Pencil-ish Animation Studios. Oh, okay. So, yeah, now just, I'm getting to work under him.
And how long has Pencil-ish Studios been around? Is it new, or?
It's been around for, like, a little under a year.
Oh, so
I
want to
say, so it's super new.
But you weren't like the original, like one of the original, they like brought you on recently. Okay. Gotcha.
So you're kind of like a second
generation. Actually it's been a full year now.
Okay.
In the summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool though.
Cool.
Yeah. So they're just kicking off, like doing their projects and stuff. That's awesome.
A lot of their like shows and stuff they're just releasing now and
yeah.
Finally getting things out there. And super exciting.
That's so exciting. That's so cool.
So do you, going back just a little bit, do you prefer to, because you've also done a lot of just completely by yourself animated shorts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you prefer that or do you prefer you work in like the storyboarding stage and you get all these character designs and a script or whatever? Or do you prefer just designing, you know what I mean? Do you prefer just doing a segment of the overarching thing while working with a larger group?
Yeah.
Or do you prefer being in total control?
There's pros and cons to both. I feel like I love having, I always have very strong opinions, so there's something very satisfying about getting to make all the decisions, because I also, like, enjoy all of the aspects of animation, so I love, like, getting to be a part of the character designs, then the storyboarding and animation, so there's something really fun about, like, getting to be, like, so involved in, like, getting to, like, really have your vision come to life. But there's something also, like, really cool about, like, just getting to, like, put in just, like, a small piece into, like, this bigger puzzle with a whole team. And I think oftentimes I'm more proud of the work that I do, like, with an entire group because like everyone else makes it so much better than I ever could. So it's just like getting to see that, I mean, it's super humbling and is just like I'm always so grateful that I can like work on those projects.
It's interesting how you said proud and humbling like in the same
I know
the same sentiment that you heard at the same time. That's cool.
That's really cool.
You, when we came down here to visit a little over a year ago, you were already here and we stayed with you, and there was one day you were, because we're only here for like a weekend, and I think it was at least one of the days that you were like, yeah, I'm gonna be working and with on this project till probably like 2 or something like that, and you texted like 1 and like, it's probably gonna be more like 4, and then you texted like 4 and like, we're probably gonna be here all night.
Yeah.
And you basically worked on that for like 10 hours.
Yeah.
How big of like, so I say all that because you like, that was only like that was a fairly small group, that was like 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
How at like Pencil-ish, how large, I mean, you're like in a specific department, but like how large is it? How many people are working on a given project and how long are the projects and things
yeah,
like that?
There's a lot of people. I'm not positive actually, because my part is so small that there's just
there are no small parts.
Hey, thank you. Small animators.
do you do this from home or do you like go in?
It's completely remote.
That's
so
awesome.
Like we'll like have like Zoom meetings and stuff, and I think pretty much everyone is in Nashville, so like when there's like a premiere of the show, like
everyone can get together
but it is like mostly remote, which so I'm less like capable of being like, oh well, Nancy is over there and this guy is doing this, so I'm not positive how many people, but I know quite a few.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Going back again to character design. Character design is one of the stages, like, because it's I don't want to say this because you'll probably have rebuttals for me. From what I've understood from my outside perspective, the storyboarding is very like you're figuring out camera angles, you're figuring out character emotion and all that. With like writing, you're figuring out just like the story and the essence of the characters and all that. Character design to me, I think, is one of the most intriguing aspects of it because it requires like starting from scratch in, to an extent. You know what I mean? You, because at that point, or maybe I don't, maybe I'm wrong, but like, what is the stage before character design is just the script, right? So you're taking just the written like description of the characters and you have to create a visual representation for that. What's that like? Because I mean, again, you've created a lot of characters just for your, you know, for your own, where you're doing everything, shorts and all that. But like, have you done any character design where you're given a script or an idea and you create characters just from that? And how does that come about?
Yeah, I haven't done that much of like character design for like other people. I've worked on it just super recently for one guy that I met for a script that he was writing. And that was interesting because I was really trying to, like, get in his head about, like, what the characters were, like, who they were. Because, like, when you're designing them, like, in their posture and, like, everything, you really want to, like, strongly convey, like, who is this person? And he knows them, but, like, I don't know who they are yet. Yeah. So I was, like, just, like, questioning him. I felt kind of bad, but I really, like, needed to know, like, exactly like who these people were to like then go and design them. And then like when I went off, I kind of also kind of took them on myself, like started kind of like getting to know them, I feel like, for myself. And then I brought them back and they were like similar to I think who he had imagined, but there was I think kind of a part of me that I put in myself because I was like coming up with ideas of like how this character walked and like all of this different stuff.
That's really interesting. And how much are you able to communicate about the actual like how they walk, the motion of it in just like still images? And like you said, they have like there's a lot of different angles and different expressions and all that for references. But how are you communicate? How is it typically in like the industry communicated clearly for then animators down the road to just look at just these still images and be able to figure out how they move?
Yeah, for as far as like animators, they get the character designs, and often like in the character designs, there'll be a few sheets where it's more like action poses or like the character is just like doing things like. Playing with their hair or like eating or like stuff like that. So you get just like a really, if you're good at it, like Amanda Jolly or like some of my favorite character designers, like you look at their stuff and you just like know that character. Like the way they draw them is like just everything is so thought through. And then that animator gets those and then they also get the storyboard. So they have like a general idea of like, the acting of the scene, what the where the character moves, like what they're doing, and stuff like that.
I don't know how relevant it is because we've kind of moved past
That's
it.
That's okay.
But you just like that when you watch a bad animated movie, how many bad animated movies have you seen?
There's so many. There's very few animated movies I like. Whenever anyone finds out I like do animation, they always think I love like every animated movie, so they're like, oh my goodness, like tell me about your favorite animated movies, and I'm like,
it's a pretty short list. That's interesting.
All the Brad Birds, but like
because you can see this just like, I mean, you in every lazy version of music or animation or film or whatever, the you can just tell that like they took the same model and gave this one blonde hair and they give this one a mustache or whatever it is, as opposed to like the really really great animated movies where everything is so distinct. And even I mean like Ratatouille, I think that's just, you know, you mentioned Brad Bird and that's one of the best movies. The like the chefs in the kitchen, each one of them maybe has maybe a dozen lines. They're very small parts, but like even in the first just overhead shot where Remy and Gusto are talking and pointing them all out, they have such distinct mannerisms that are so consistent throughout the entire movie that, and like I don't know if you can like give us super just distinct insight, but like is that from the character design that gives them that? Is it the specific, the animators giving that to them in these scenes? Because now it's a little bit different. They do hand off characters, but from scene to scene these days, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I think a lot of that comes from the research. Mm. You can tell, like, man, like, if you think about Coco,
that's such a
all of, like, the research, the team went down to Mexico and they were, like, drawing mm-hmm. just, like, people in the streets.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, like, looking at their hands and, like, right. looking at, like, the food they were making and, like, the different people, what they were selling and yeah. the colors of the walls. And, like,
it's not just, like, they designed the main characters and then, like, the main scenes, mm-hmm. but, like, the flowers growing in the cracks of the sidewalk yeah. and those kinds of things.
And thought, like, they it weren't, like, oh, what does Mexico look like? Google right. a few images and then right. we're like, that's good. they, like, actually went down there and lived there and, like, mm-hmm. actually just, like, saw everything, and then all of that they put back into the movie and, yeah. like, just built this world. And a lot of times, like, thankfully, Pixar's, like, has enough money to do yeah. that. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times, like, studios just don't, so they're rushed. Right. And they just, like, don't put that, like, time
right.
into, like, the researching stage. Yeah. And, like, then you just, like, don't have this world that's believable.
Yeah, and that's because, like, again, going using Ratatouille as an example, they studied rats. They studied how yeah. they move, but it's not right. like you watch Ratatouille. It's not a movie about rats, mm-hmm. you know? It's not like the whole thing is about, well, look at how realistic these rats are, because mm-hmm. they're very humanoid rats. They're very, yeah. they have human mannerisms and stuff, but it's not in an uncanny way. It's a very natural transformation from, like, a really, like, photorealistic rat to a, like, humanoid rat that walks right. on two legs or whatever. But even there, it's like if they hadn't done the research on how do rats actually move and how do they mm-hmm. actually look and those kinds of things, they probably would be a bit more uncanny, and it would have mm-hmm. been a bit more like, these don't look, I'm distracted by the fact that these are just humans yeah. in a rat costume or whatever.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And really, that's yeah. That makes me think about all of the movies about Legos before the Lego movie have been, like, they would take Legos and, like, move their arms like their human arms, right. like bend the plastic right. and, like, bend their torso and right. stuff, and they just, like, look like humans. But right. then, like, when they made the Lego movie, they actually were like, okay, how can we make these, like, right. look like you're just playing with the Lego? Mm-hmm. So they would, like, move their arms and, like how a yeah. kid would, and just,
and there's yeah. a good amount of actual stop motion, yeah. like actual literal Legos that they filmed in stop so motion cool. in that movie. But even without mm-hmm. that, even just animated, I think virtually every single thing that you see is crafted actually from individual mm-hmm. Lego pieces that are built up to create the scenes and stuff. I just watched that movie a little while ago. Dave hadn't seen it for the first time. Oh, it's so good. That movie is so good. Why is that movie so good, Marge? Give us a quick rundown. Hot take. Why is
Lego goodness. No pressure.
Oh, boy. I think it encourages... Okay. I think, oh man, it takes Emmett, and it's like this normal guy, and then he becomes like this who, like, finds out he's supposed to be the great one, right. and then he's not actually the great one, mm-hmm. but he rises to the occasion, right. and he discovers, like, this creativity that right. I think we all have, and I think it kind of just, like, shows that we all, as human beings, have this beautiful creative side that we can all use, and it just mm-hmm. like shows that in such a cool and funny way, and yeah, and yeah. there's like a million other reasons, and
we all have the capability yeah. of, like, defaulting to, like, a lower standard for ourselves right. too, yeah, like the norm, absolutely. Like the normal,
and like yeah. Wildstyle says later on when she's like, I used to look down on people like you, when she's uh-huh. talking, giving that speech to the people, it's like, I think the quote-unquote naturally talented artistic people mm-hmm. can feel elite and can feel yeah, like you right. just don't get it, or like mm-hmm. I can explain my process or whatever, as opposed to everyone recognizing we all have this within us mm-hmm. and
we're all Legos at heart.
That's so truly
I love how I love how I mean, I guess I think it's just because I think it's such a beautiful representation of what, like, the comedy looks like yeah. in how just, I mean, go beat by beat and it basically all lines up, but
And you mean comedy as, like, the structure of
like, yeah. the artistic comedy. Yeah. How the villain is redeemed in such a forgiving and loving way where the holding out his hand. I mean, it's just like he's literally holding out his hand saying, I want you to take it. I want you to join me. And how, shoot, what's the line? I know this very well. All these things appeal. But, you know, there's the prophecy is made up, but it's also real. Because I am the special, and so are you, and so is everyone. I think that's so powerful. That's such a good... Such a good representation of humanity, I think.
But it's also, like, okay, I guess, how did they do that so well? Because it could have been so generic.
It could have.
It could have been really bad. Could've. Like, we're all special. Like, we all, like, what was it specifically about the Lego movie that...
I think... Sorry.
Yeah. No, you well, go.
Just hearing Miller and Lord talk, the writers and directors of that movie, hearing them talk, they genuinely... love movies. They love storytelling. They love people. They love the facts. I mean, you sent me that one masterclass they gave where they talk about birds. And they're like, look at these crazy, elaborate nests that birds build. That's amazing. We are way smarter than birds, guys. We can do way cooler than that. And they just genuinely love the fact that exactly what the Lego movie is. They love the fact that we all have that. They love that. And I think it's because they started with watching videos of actual stop motion Lego videos on YouTube and going like, look at how crazy talented and creative people are. It'd be so cool if we had a whole movie of this.
Yeah.
And they started with that. And then they realized like, that's the essence of the story. The essence of that story is celebrating that divine creativity we are given, that we just have, that we need to figure out how to the source that we're emitting it from or whatever. I don't know. I mean, I just think it comes from a very genuine place. It's not a, how do we tell a story with Legos where it's cutesy and you can say we're all special? Because no, it's not that. And it can be very cheesy. And all good stories, I think, have an element in them that plenty of other people try and rip off. And you're like, you thought it was just the fact that we were all the special, but that is a good part, but it's a good part because it's supported by all these other things. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I feel like it's almost like when you take characters and you take like the story and you force them to go through these character arcs, but you aren't letting the characters. And then there's some people who like create these characters and they let them like actually like naturally like go through these character arcs. Because we don't have to force it. Like we all have that within us. So like,
And you go. Well, sorry, those are just some of the best stories I think of is, look at like Toy Story. The hero's journey doesn't play out exactly how it typically does, but it doesn't make sense for the hero's journey to play out exactly the same way. Because for one thing, with the first Toy Story movie, I'd argue you have two heroes you're dealing with. Which one of them is going through which stage at which point? And I think they're handing it back and forth, and then I think it's beautifully done because it's just watching characters. It's just watching characters grow and change and figure out how to relate to each other and deal with this world.
And the writers are like giving them that room to do that. Just letting them like naturally do that. I feel like they're not afraid about like making them do that so they can let them actually develop.
As opposed to lesser movies like you're saying are just like, well, this is the point of the story where this thing needs to happen.
Yeah.
Even if they hadn't done anything that would support the characters actually doing that thing, it's like, well, we know.
And now how did we get them from A to B to Z? And just,
I think, okay, well, Lego movie rant.
That's our review. So we like it.
What ages or like, was this part of your, like, your family do this where you critique and like analyze movies? Is that something that you grew up with, or is there like a certain age that you started like noticing these types of things in movies?
I think it was both my parents were English teachers and would just,
that's just part your family kind of,
we would just all talk about it all the time. And then we met your family and it's like, oh, same.
I see, the thing is, like, I thought everyone watched movies like this and would like talk about them. And then it's been more recently that I realized people don't do that.
Well, like you were saying, like, people are like, oh, you like animation, watch all these, and you're like, this, they don't get it. And it's like, well, those people anyway. Sorry, I don't want to say anything disparaging to this. But that is something, I mean,
let's name names.
We're the biggest idiots you've met. Your dad also had a study where we would, I mean, he'd normally start with like a theological idea or concept, and then he'd find like a movie that can fit within the situation to kind of exemplify what we're talking about. And I think that was a really good, for me, it was a really cool exploration of both the theological or philosophical idea that we were exploring, as well as just watching the movie and critiquing that and seeing, because we were talking, this was fun. You came over and we had pizza together just before we started recording, and we just immediately, like 5 minutes in, we're like, let's jump in and talk about symbolism and stories, because that's how Margaret works. You were talking about Damien Chazelle, about how he said, like, I mean, you can say it if you want. You say it.
I was listening to a Damien Chazelle interview, and he was like talking about how in movies, like everything, like things need to be symbolic in movies, because you aren't going to show like every single thing that person does. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to show like time passing and things like to symbolize like their relationship growing and stuff. So you have that beautiful dance where you like can tell time is passing and like this thing is growing and stuff. So he was just like talking a lot about how within stories they're like, you need to use symbols, and they aren't supposed to be, I guess, super realistic.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's something, when we would talk in your dad's study about these things, where for a while I didn't like it. For a while I was like, why are we just talking about the symbols?
Interesting.
And I was, you know, it's like, well, yeah, we all know that. We all recognize that, like, this is the Christ figure, and this is the you know, Judas, the betrayal figure or whatever. And there were these very definite, like, that symbolic of whatever it may be. And it didn't hit me until I watched the Darjeeling Limited. Have you seen that movie?
No, that's a brilliant movie.
I think you should. I think you would really like it.
Let's watch it.
Yes, it's a really fantastic movie. Where it is, I mean, it's a Wes Anderson movie, and he is just one of the least subtle filmmakers I've ever seen.
Yes,
and it works so well. He's constantly being like, "Remember, you're watching a movie, guys. You are at home in your living room, and you're watching a movie." He's not letting you get absorbed in the story. He's not letting you get lost in the world. He's constantly reminding you, this is a storybook world that I'm creating. This is a movie. It's fictional. So this is not real. It's like if we panned out 1 inch, you would see the edge of the set.
Yeah.
If we panned out another inch, you would see the lights. You know what I mean? It's like he's constantly drawing your attention to that fact. And I think somehow because of that, he's able to go for you to just be so in love with story itself, just storytelling, that you're like, I don't care what story you're telling. I love that you're just celebrating stories. Anyway, in the Darjeeling Limited, there's a specific moment, I won't spoil it, where it is just so beat for beat for beat for beat, like symbol, 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 symbol. And I'm just like, it was so hitting me over the head, and I was completely just like, that is beautiful. That is such a beautiful example of the thing that they're symbolizing. Where's it going with this? Symbolism. I don't remember what my final point was. I just think it's really interesting how, because then you brought up the Damien Chazelle, and I thought I hadn't thought of that specifically, but yeah, it's like if stories aren't meant to be literal, stories aren't meant to be, here's exactly how life works and here's exactly how you should live yours. It's stories are inherently, I mean, it's art, it's artificial, right? Mm-hmm. It's a symbol of life, right? Mm-hmm. It should be a symbol of life, but anyway,
almost wonder also. Earlier I said, like, they aren't supposed to be realistic, but they are supposed to, I think, point to the realest things in our lives.
Yes, absolutely.
And, like, kind of often, like, this untangible, like, sorry, that's a big word, thing, and it's, like, how do you do that?
Right.
And I think a lot of times, it's like exploring how to talk about those realities, like within our lives and stuff.
It's again, I don't know, just like I feel like almost every Pixar movie you could point to and be like, that doesn't make sense, right? Mm-hmm. Like it wouldn't actually happen that way. But somehow you're like, no, but I absolutely love these monsters and those are my favorite characters right now. And I love the fish, you know, and it doesn't make sense for you to feel that way. But it's not about, but because the monsters are representing what friendship is and what it is to love someone and be and selflessly give yourself to those people, that you're able to look past the fact that they're monsters and this isn't realistic, and you're looking to, but the realest things, the things that they're actually, the actual like conflicts of the movie could exist in any, in any story. It also makes me think of this book I started reading just today called Screenwriting 101, which I was telling y'all about beforehand. I sound awful smart. Where he's talking about, for the longest time in Greek culture, those are like the earliest written stories we can find, for the most part, are Greek tragedies. And they were tragedies for a very long time until they started doing comedies. And typically, a comedy started with a tragic event. The conflict, the world that they built was this, like, here's the situation, the status quo is this, like, impossible thing to undertake. And the point of the comedy was to create an incredibly absurd, so the audience would feel this, like, oh, that's right, there's drought, there's this war, whatever it may be. And the comedy was taking this character who found the most absurd way to solve the problem. So it's like, you know, the gods are, in the play, the birds, the gods are oppressing us, you know, we're suffering and all that. And so the way they solve that is by traveling up to the heavens, and he sprouts wings and he flies above and he builds a city above the gods. And that's where they live now. And I never thought of that before, but I think like a tragedy or a comedy kind of gets more and more absurd as it goes. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's kind of, I don't know, anyway, because we were talking about La La Land just the other day about how that movie starts as a comedy. It starts very fantastical and whimsical and all that, and it kind of goes the opposite direction. It gets more and more just like, like we were talking about before when we started recording, uncomfortable and unnerving,
like,
in a way.
You can almost see the point when it becomes a movie. Less a musical and more like a like that the dinner scene or whatever. Like, we talked about it on the podcast, didn't we? Okay, so maybe I won't go into it. But it's so interesting. Like, I didn't never realize that until we'd had that conversation. Isn't it weird how many things, well, we've talked about this before, like bad movies, we can point out all the things that are bad about it. But when it's a good movie, sometimes the first thing is like, that was a good movie. And then you go into it and you're like, oh, it's good because of this. And it's and usually they're good because it's effortlessly putting it in.
You're not normally like, that was done well. It's like, oh, I love that character. I loved that scene because of.
And then you have to delve in more and like learn that. You know, Remy was designed based off of real rats or whatever it is. Where if it was like poorly done, you'd you'd say right away like, well, that took me out of the world too. That's interesting.
What is the most important thing in a story?
Okay. I guess character.
What do you mean by that?
You're pressing me on it.
You know, you're gonna ask would
just like go off and be like, yes, character.
Yeah, there we go.
I think because it's what, like, we can all relate to and, like, kind of apply to ourselves, like, look and see what they've learned. Like, we tell stories because we want to learn from them and see, like, other people, like, their stories and stuff. Sorry, that was really poorly worded. But, yeah, I'm not entirely sure. What do you guys think?
Most important.
I'm not sure. That's a pretty big question.
I think, like, I mean, seeing a character or a group go through a progression of, like, a journey of sorts, which is could be many things.
Right.
Like a quest story or something. Like, yeah, like you were even talking about earlier, we don't want to see, like, this character get, like, we pick the highlights, like you were saying when we were talking, and it's not just every day, it's like you see a progression. So I feel like that's structurally like an important part, but maybe that's kind of,
I'd say so. I mean, I think like
obvious, I don't know.
I think like Cars isn't about Lightning McQueen wanting winning a race. It's about him wanting to win the race and learning there are more important things than winning races, and it's community and it's connecting with others.
So is there usually like a realization in like a main character's mind Or I'm trying to think of every story, but
I wonder
every single one ever. Let me give me a second.
I wonder if it's like the change of the heart of the person. And that might be like within the story of like the character's heart changing. But it also might be like in a tragedy where like maybe they remain bitter, they remain like in this like horrible place. But the person's who heart changes isn't necessarily the character, but it's yours.
Right.
And I wonder, like, if, like, yeah,
that's the even in a tragedy, though, usually the perspective can change a little bit where they decide to become more bitter or they decide to become the other way. Yeah. So it's, like, going left or right.
Well,
like,
I mean, I think stories inherently have some kind of change. I mean, I think it's not totally static. If it were, it would just be kind of a non-existent thing. I think everything is constantly changing a little bit. But yeah,
do they overcome, or do they?
And I think in comedies, it's typically there are a lot of definite moments of whether that's the hero, you know, Emmett deciding I'm gonna sacrifice myself, and then him deciding I'm gonna go back and save my friends, and then Lord Business saying I'm gonna decide to change my heart and care about you people and not try to control you. Whereas I think tragedies, I think that's a really good point, Marge, I think typically the effect isn't on the characters themselves, and that's part of the tragic thing, is that you see this is where your heart should be changing. This is where I would want to go. And I think that's why tragedies are unnerving to us, especially in today's culture, is because you're going, this is where it makes sense for you to go, and you're not doing that. Mm-hmm. But there's a way of doing that. And typically you see this in movies that are supposed to be comedies that are just poorly done, where you're like, I'm not rooting for you because you're not going the direction I want to go, and we're supposed to be rooting for you. You know, in tragedies, there's kind of this, I don't know, there's this grace that's given where, you're not supposed to agree with everything that happens in the story. The ending of the story is not supposed to be like, there we go, that was good. If that was your reaction, that wouldn't be a tragedy, right? I don't know. That's another thing. Why do you think stories are important? Asking all the big questions tonight.
I mean, I don't want to get super theological.
Yeah, you do. Don't kid yourself, Marge.
But I mean, first, before that, I think we want to know other people. We want to like experience that relationship. And through stories, there is that knowing the other person. And then also, I guess more theologically, I think pretty much like all good stories are ultimately the story of Christ, because like God is in all of our lives, and through stories like we can see that, and we can see like other people like either like living out that through a story, or we can see like the ways, like I think of Flannery O'Connor, like how oftentimes, like, there will be, like, a really, broken person, and God's grace will always come to that person, but often in, like, the most, like, ugly, like, situations, like, a person being shot in the chest, or, like, stuff like that. And I just, like, I think through, like, stories, we can come to know our creator, as well as like we get to imitate our creator in making them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why I would argue that even the tragedies, even the stories, the ironic stories are also imitating Christ, but in a twisted or corrupted version of that, which I think again is why we react so negatively to them a lot of the times, because we want the main characters of our stories to be righteous and generous and loving and sacrificial. And when we see the characters, like you were talking about Great Gatsby, being completely unselfless, being completely selfish and driven only to satisfy themselves and driven only to serve themselves. And we just watch that life fall apart. We just watch that deteriorate. Deteriorate. There was an extra R in there.
Is that right?
I'll say it really fast.
Yeah.
It's really cool. We just, we like to see, I mean, going back to the Lego movie, something that I love a lot about the Lego movie is that he has no aspirations to be a hero. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the movie, he doesn't want to do anything significant. Yeah. He wants to have sausages with his friends after work, right? He wants to just be the most chill. Well, there's one guy. I do love me my giant sausages. Sausages? No way. I love sausages. I love them. Anyone want to go to the sports bar and have, what is it? Who wants to have some chicken wings and get crazy? Chicken wings? No way. But he has no aspirations to be heroic. The only thing that makes him want to be heroic is that people want him to be heroic. Hmm. And at first, it's kind of a selfish desire on his part because he wants to impress Wildstyle, but it becomes a thing where he, where Benny says you'll have come up with ideas like you always do, and he's like, I guess I do always come up with ideas. I mean, I think it's a beautiful thing for many, many reasons. He realizes he actually is special. He realizes he actually does have the capability of doing something heroic. Mm-hmm. Where was I going with this? But I mean, it's just. Even that is an ironic and cheap imitation of a Christ figure. And I think Emmett is a beautiful representation of Christ. I think it's a beautiful, sacrificial, loving, completely selfless representation of who Jesus was and is. But even there are these, I don't know where this is going exactly.
I think also, like, stories can be super messy. And, like, they can be, like, I mean, they're like us. We're super, like, complex and messy and broken, but also beautiful and good. Right. Like, we can reflect Christ, but then we can also be just, like, broken and, like, not at all.
Right.
And I think oftentimes, like, stories, like, reflect that in such a profound way that help us, like, to think about that and maybe, like, a more deep way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's also cool, like, learning about, like, it's a really cool way to learn about people. Like, why is this story so important to you? Like, why do you love this book or this movie so much? And they'll talk about it and you kind of can get to know, like, their heart through that because just, like, hearing them talk about why certain heroes or certain, like, things in movies connect with them.
Well, that's really interesting because I would hear my mom talk about, like, Flannery O'Connor or Joan Didion, these writers that she just loved, that she adored. And I read a little and I'm like, this is so depressing. Mom, why are you so depressing? Why do you like all this stuff? Because it's like, because then something else would, you know, that is actually depressing, you know, a song would play or something like that. And she'd be like, why do we have to listen to such depressing music? And I'm like, Mom, you read depressing stuff all the time. But in Flannery O'Connor, in Joan Didion, it's not depressing. It's here's how broken people are. Hmm. And here's how we can still receive grace. Yeah. Here's how we can still accept mercy.
And we can all, I mean, maybe not exactly the same as, like, the Flannery O'Connor stories, but, like, we can relate. Because, like, what you're saying is, like, we have both sides.
Yeah.
We are broken and we receive grace every day.
Right. Yeah.
So, but to see, like, a different perspective of someone, it's really interesting.
And I think, again, like, going back to what you're saying about, like, getting to know people, I got to know my mom in that she sees herself as broken. She sees herself as depressing.
Mm-hmm.
But can also, like you just said, can also look at every single day and say, I'm receiving grace. I'm receiving mercy. And I think that's a really cool thing that God works through those stories that we tell. And especially with, like, mom specifically, I'm just going to harp on her for a second longer. It was such, like, a personal thing for her to, like, read by herself. It was, I mean, it's not like she, like, made a huge, huge deal out of it or anything, but it wasn't like this for me, like, music where it's like, I love to go to concerts. I love to listen to bands. I would like to share it with people. It's a very, like, communal thing that I like to be a part of. Whereas reading for my mom wasn't that way as much until after she'd read it. And then she'd talk to people about it or whatever. But that's just really cool how God was, like, using those stories for her to see how grace was abounding in her own life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. That's cool.
Well, you had to bring God into it, Mark.
Oh, man.
Did you have anything else on your...
Well, I had, like, one random question, which was kind of, is there something, like, what's something you've learned this past year? Like, it can be, like, art, like, skill-wise, or just people, or just, like, living in Nashville, whatever it is. I just, like, it'd be interesting to, like, hear something. Okay. If you could think of it. But if not, we can save it for next time. Something
I've learned this year. I think... one of the things is I just really love animation.
You didn't know that before?
I didn't realize.
It's been like 6 years of you obsessing over it.
Right? There's something like sometimes like I like draw so much and like so much for school that like I sometimes like forget how much I genuinely like enjoy it. But I started doing this other job. I'm like also like working at a preschool, and I would just like during nap time, I would just start drawing, and I would like lose track of time, and like the entire day had been going so slowly.
The kids are asleep for like 3 hours.
Exactly. I finally get to draw, and I just like enjoy it, and I love it so much. And I feel like I'm just like so happy right now, like getting to do it as my job, and just realizing, like, you know what? I still really enjoy this. Like, this is just like so part of like just the way I enjoy communicating and expressing myself and all that. So
that's cool. I think even just being in a different like area or somewhere you're not familiar with, you realize the things that are important to you more.
Oh,
like,
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I love, whatever it is. So yeah, that's cool.
For sure. How about super you cool. guys?
Something we learned in the past year.
Yeah.
That me and Liv are really good friends, but we also need other friends. Well, like you just said, we moved here and I realized, like, oh, I really like hanging out with Liv, but I also love hanging out with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Friends are important. Friends people are important.
Yes.
Heck yeah.
That sounded, I mean that sincerely, but I don't mean to be like, I don't like hanging out with Liv.
You just enjoy like being around people. It's an
important
people.
Thing for me to realize.
Just so everyone
like,
knows.
Right. No, I mean, I say that as kind of a joke, but like, it's important to realize that like you can be best friends with someone, but that doesn't mean you can like depend on that person to like meet every aspect of, because like Liv is a very specific kind of person. And there are parts of her personality that are not parts of my personality that part of my personality needs to connect with other types of people. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I think, I would be similar in like, in just, it's when you do move away from home, you have to be purposeful about meeting new people. Otherwise you won't. So that's been something good to learn, but also like tricky too. And it's interesting how many people out there are excited to like, talk to you. I don't know. Like
you a lot of people that are really friendly who care about you.
And just being here, like a lot of people know like love talking about music and hopefully everywhere, but I've just noticed it in Nashville more. Just really fun. Really
That's
cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. So good.
And I think even when you take a big risk, or especially maybe I don't know. God puts people and things in your life, and it might not be like it's going to be the easiest, like like life's not supposed to be easy, but it's just so like I feel like I've felt grace more than any in this whole year. I feel like
I think when you do take a big risk, you'll kind of it sounds kind of selfish, but like you'll realize who's really behind you.
Yeah,
like those people who are like, yeah, go for it. Like we'll be here to help you out, kind of thing. The people who are like, really, those are the ones where I'm like, all right, well.
And I just hope to be that person for whoever else is doing that in their life, you know? I got to work on that.
Because sometimes I'm like, let's go to Montreal. And you're like, what? Why? And I'm like, let's go snowshoeing.
Come on.
Don't pick Montreal. I would have said
anything. That's what I'm saying. Like, I want to go to Montreal.
Sweet. Good for you.
I just went to Montreal just now.
Support you, Aiden.
Thanks,
go
much.
Do
she's
it.
She's a real friend.
Real friend is.
So she was. I'll go to Montreal and I'll find out there's a thriving music scene there.
Oh my gosh!
And I'll be like,
he'll become famous.
The reason I made it was because Margaret Slater was the first one to support me.
Yep.
That could be your speech, welcome. Your acceptance. Yeah.
We didn't introduce you at the beginning. Shoot, I'm just did
we? I thought we did. My name's Margaret.
This is Margaret Slater. We didn't say your last name.
Hi.
Marge, do you have a favorite memory of me?
Oh, boy. All the big, difficult questions. I think there was this one time when he came over and we hung out and we just talked about Phil Lord and Chris Miller and animation and movies and art. I thought
that was just a solid like year where that was all we did.
Yeah, and I remember you left and being like, "That he's a good friend. I appreciated that conversation."
That's nice.
Yeah. It's a fun time.
It was a good time. Yeah. You and me hung out a lot more purposefully after you started animating. Because we didn't get to, we just would see each other in theater and stuff. But then after you like left and abandoned us for your own selfish endeavors, then we had to be a lot more purposeful to hang out. Which most of the time, the purposeful hanging out was like you being like, "Hey, I have some ideas. Do you want to come over and brainstorm?"
Yeah.
And we would brainstorm a little bit, but it would mostly be us talking about Miller and Lord. Yeah.
It was me like needing something for an animation project.
I remember also when we were like in middle school, when we both started like actually getting to know each other, I feel like, really well, was when we both started reading a series of unfortunate events and like talking about it.
That was when we first like,
"I love this book. Yeah. Oh my goodness, I love this book." And we would like talk about the story and just like, it's a fun time.
Like we knew each other for years and years and years before then. I feel like we knew,
I've known you since I was like 4.
Yeah. But that was when we were probably like 12 or 13. So we'd already known each other for almost a decade. That's crazy.
Whoa.
I've known you for almost 20 years, Marge. That's wild.
That is.
Good friend.
Oh, man.
You're a good friend, Marge.
You're a good friend.
Liv, do you want to chime in on our relationship?
Now we're going to pat each other back. And,
be nice. I think the first time you gave me a hug was when you moved away. Oh. That's probably not entirely true.
That was like the only time I touched him.
I just remember because it was kind of awkward. It's like, Marge isn't a very huggy person.
Huh. We've never done this before. Have you ever hugged a person and you're like, "Wait a minute, I don't think I've ever hugged you before."
Yeah. It's a unique experience. It's for
like
sure.
That moment.
See, if it's like you meet them and they're like, hug you immediately when you first meet them, then it's
those
like.
Those people.
They're those people, and it's like, my first reaction is that. But then it's like, okay, at least I know that like you just hug everyone.
And then you just hug them all the time.
Right. Whereas there are those people that you've known for a while, and then at one point they're like, "Let's start hugging." And then it's that kind of.
It's that next step. Yeah.
How do we graduate to this level?
In that friendship, man.
It's kind of strange.
That's pretty funny.
Spring that hug out of you.
Yeah, that'll happen. Yeah. Okay, well, do you want to wrap up? We can go get ice cream?
Yeah, let's eat ice cream.
Let's do it. All right. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Thanks, Marge, for being on the show.
Thanks, Margaret. Well,
thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
So fun.
We should have you. We'll have you back soon.
Okay,
sounds good. So folks, look forward to that.
Peace out.
Yeah. We'll see you next week for a brand new episode of Between Takes. Can we record one thing? We're going to do an intro later on, but can we just get you going, Margaret Slater? We'll be like,
me?
Yeah, we'll be like, and we're joined today by
Margaret Slater. Wait, do it again.
We're joined today by
Margaret Slater.
First one was better.
Okay. Wait, we have three tries. You can pick.
Okay.
Okay.
We're joined today by
Margaret Slater.
Margaret Slater.
That was good.
Margaret Slater.